Basketball fans, welcome back to the NBA Playoff Banter Podcast. He's Marshall, I'm Chris, and we're here to talk some good old-fashioned NBA playoffs. Obviously, the conference finals are set. The Minnesota Timber... Oh, wait, hold on. That was the wrong conference. Eastern Conference, Boston versus Miami. The trilogy is set. Going to be an interesting one, that's for sure. Of course, we'll start the show by recapping yesterday, Game 7. The C's put it on the 76ers. Tatum went nuts, and I would say Harden and Embiid did not go nuts. Obviously, you know, L.A. and Denver, big, big matchup, like big, long matchup pause. A lot of points in the paint in that series. Who will take some of that away? We'll see the matchups. We were just talking about it before we hit record. The matchups over there, who's going to guard who? It's a really interesting twist. And I don't know, man, the way these teams have played, even on the East and whatnot, I got a feeling we're at least, well, for sure going six games in both series, in my opinion. But, man, wouldn't it be something if we could get two game sevens? We've only got, what, two game sevens so far, right, in the whole playoffs. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting. We're going to preview and predict it. Of course, we'll, you know, like I said, we'll start with game seven, then we'll lightly brush on the Denver, Phoenix, and L.A. Warriors stuff. Obviously, Phoenix, we'll spend a little bit of time on. You know, the coach got fired. Ayton's probably on the move. Is CP3 going to be there? All that good stuff. But, yeah, really looking forward till tomorrow night. I mean, it's every other day, too. There's no two-day break anywhere in either series. And that's going to be interesting with Boston coming off a seven-game series to a pretty much well-rested team, whereas on the other side, both pretty much rested anyway. If this is your first time listening to the NBA Playoff Banter Podcast, welcome. It streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/ropeadoperadio. You don't have to go to Blog Talk and Ropeadope Radio and, you know, download the show directly there. You can find this here NBA podcast under Ropeadope Radio at Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, Player FM, TuneIn, Spreaker, Stitcher, and a host of other areas, platforms. While you're at it, why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.com and Sports News 24. And one more thing, get your TV together without the hassle of cable. Stream the best entertainment in sports, starting with 75 live channels as DirecTV Stream. For a limited time, save $120 over the first year when you get any package and buy the DirecTV streaming device. There's no annual contracts, no hidden fees, plus learn how to get premium channels included for the first 3 months with qualifying packages. Sign up today, DirecTV Stream. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and bring in my co-host, who probably still has Las Vegas brain. And anybody that, you know, goes to Vegas for a couple of days, he didn't go just for a couple of days, know that you kind of just have this haze after, whether it's the drinking, the gambling, just all purpose. How are you doing, my friend?
Not bad at all, because the, like, last 10 hours we were there was, like, the best 10 hours of the trip. So.
Oh, wow. Okay. Nice.
Yeah, we won playing at the craps table, a couple hundred. Hit a slot machine we'd been to the whole trip and hit, like, over 100. Then I won 150 at the airport on the way home. So.
Oh, yeah, the airport gambling.
I know. Hey,
sometimes I forget about that. And I'm like, hey, cool, I'll wait for my flight. No problem.
Yeah, exactly. So I was waiting for a flight. I got $150 playing out of the slots at the airport. So I came home relatively close to even. You know, obviously you're going to have days in Vegas where you spend money and days where you lose some. But to finish on a high, it actually felt pretty good. So now it's back to two more weeks of teaching, then summer break for a good 2 month run, and then back to teaching again. So yeah, it was a needed trip. That was fun after our softball season got over. Now it's time to watch sports again and relax and try to get better at golf this summer too.
Well, you know, you could try and try and
yeah,
try.
Just try is the key word.
Exactly. As long as you're trying it. You know, that is the key word there, no doubt about it. And let's jump into Game 7. Scott Foster was the lead coming in. I know a lot of people are talking about that. You know, anytime Foster's has anything to do with a game involving Harden or CP3, you know people are going to talk about that. That's no big surprise if you're new to it or something like that. That's normal. Obviously some, you know, some stuff from Game 7. I don't know. Sometimes in the playoffs, I kind of wish they'd save those NBA report stuff for like after or something. Because in the playoffs, it always gets you. You're just like, really, dude? Why the fuck did you even bring this up, dude? You know, it's stupid. But either way, Game 7 came down to it. But, you know, before you get into Game 7, and, you know, I hate to do this to my co-host, but that Game 6, man, I mean, there was from, like, the six-minute mark until, like, under a minute in the fourth quarter, the Philly scores one freaking point, man. They were, like, 0 of 9 with just a jumper in garbage time. That was a closeout game to try to, you know, close that puppy down. It's just, you know, it was just bad. And they needed – and that was one of those games, you know, we have plenty of stuff to say about Embiid, not just Harden for Game 7. But Harden, you know, that was a rough one, obviously, due for him. But just in general, that's where it all kind of started. They're up in the series. They're at home. And ultimately, we'll get to that Game 7. And, you know, it was the eighth Game 7 between Philly and Boston, according to ESPN Stats and Info. Most between NBA teams all time, Game 7. That was kind of interesting. The other matchup with at least five of the only other matchup is the Celtics-Lakers, which – That's really no surprise. But, yeah, that Game 6 stuff, you know, 13 officiating errors, disadvantaged the 76ers and all that. And no doubt about it, you know, there is some of that plays into it. It's the NBA. It's sports in general. I mean, there's a lot of shit. Speaking of, boxing just had a horrible stoppage over the weekend. So it is what it is. But talk a little bit about that Game 7. Or Game 6, and then we'll get into the Game 7 part. Because for a moment in time, it looked like Philly was going to disprove all the critics from the last chunk of years. As far as, you know, getting past the second round and getting the signature series win, which is obviously what that would have been.
Well, the reason I bet Philadelphia to win Game 6 was because I thought after Game 5, it's like, well, hey, you're good. Like, that Game 5 was, like, another chance where Boston, like, they screwed around with Atlanta and lost Game 5 at home. And they do it again. I'm like, okay, well, you go back to Philly. This team can finally get the monkey off their back. And even though Tatum was playing, like, complete dog crap in the first half, well, for actually for the first three quarters, and Philly came out slow, too, they finally got their rhythm. In the third quarter, they got hot. They kind of had the lead there, and then everything just, like, fell apart in that final stretch there. But it was, like, so much, like, individual basketball. Like, the pick and rolls that Harden and Embiid did weren't maybe as smooth as, like, a Golden State kind of one, but it had a rhythm to it. Like, it was a lot of times Harden drives. There was a little drop pass for Embiid for, like, a shot from the elbow. But, or you find Maxey on an outlet pass, and he's probably the fastest guy on the court. Like, their offense just went to – we're going to let you shoot, and next time I'm going to shoot, and if we miss those shots, let's just try to go individual style again. Like, Boston's defense is good, sure. I don't think it's the immaculate team they had last year for defense, but Philadelphia, it's like, you have the players that can score, and your role players aren't like a bunch of chumps. The role players feel like, oh, those role guys have been there forever, but it was just, there was no passing. It was just come down the court, chuck. Oh, we lost it here. And, of course, as you do this, you lose your momentum. And Tatum finally got hot, eventually. So that really was just simply a blown opportunity, Chris. Tatum was 0 of 13 the first three quarters. You're at home for a closeout game. and you basically choked. Like, I think in 95% of NBA games, when the star player is an off night, you can't afford to lose the game because most stars, like a LeBron, Curry, Giannis, De'Aaron Fox, like those star players rarely ever have off nights. And Tatum was just chucking up bricks. And he finally caught a couple threes and he kind of wrapped up himself. So that was a blown opportunity for Philly. And obviously, you know, it transitioned into the last night where they sent themselves packing. But they had just individual basketball. And despite the combination of Embiid and Harden, which had moments, that kind of leaves you such a weird taste. I'm not sure if this is the combination just because there's too much it felt like too many individual-ish moments in moments where they really needed it for their team. And credit to Boston, too. And Tatum clearly was not sluggish in Game 7.
Yeah, and just getting through that horrible shooting, you know, I thought was pretty awesome for him because, you said, it was not a lot of guys can do it. Usually when you're having a bad night, okay, well, yeah, we're just going to pass. I'll try to get 12 assists or something like that. So to fight through that and have, what do you have, 16 in the fourth quarter? I think he had 16 in the fourth quarter.
He actually outscored Philadelphia in the fourth quarter himself, which also is a massive red flag.
Yeah. So, and like I said, I thought Embiid showed up in that game and Harden didn't. And we'll get to Embiid as far as game 7 overall. And then, you know, the comments made post-presser. But when you look at it, it's crazy because two games stand way the hell out for Harden. Obviously, the opening without Embiid, right? He just goes freaking nuts for 45. It's clutch shot after clutch shot after clutch shot. And then he hit another clutch shot. I mean, it was going nuts. You're like, and I was getting mad because he wasn't doing the cook thing. Maybe that's why he wasn't as consistent. He wasn't cooking it up, dude. It's like, dude, you're looking like 2016 or 14 right now. Do the cook, dude. You got the beard still. Do the cook move. But he didn't do it. He followed it up with, you know, like not good games at all. You know, I think 5 of 28 after that. Then he goes off for 42 in game 4, and it was like all purpose, you know, because he had 9 assists and stuff like that. Just went off, had a brilliant game, 16 of 23, had his step back going, hitting threes, and then, like I said, clutch shot, another, oh my God, you know, those were some fun games, and it was kind of a flashback there because they were playing solid defense. It kind of gave me Houston vibes because they had a defensive team and Harden was cooking. And then he just wasn't. He just wasn't. I mean, 4 of 16, 0 for 6, that was game 6. And then, you know, 3 of 11, 1 of 5, 5 turnovers. Once again, the last two games of the series, really, 7-game series, he only really showed up for I mean, really showed up for two of them. Now, I'll say this. The game 5, I thought he still played well because it was just under control. I think he only took like 8 or 9 shots, but he had like, yeah, I'm looking at it right now. I mean, he got to the free throw line 10 times. He had 10 assists, 17 points, only 2 turnovers. He only shot the ball 8 times. So that's a very efficient night, and the other two were going off anyway, the other two scores and whatnot. So I'll say 3 out of the 4 games, exceptional. But those other 4 games come down, and someone made a clip, Marshall, of a lot of his possessions when he had the ball. And I'm not saying it was Simmons-like, right? I'm not saying that at all. But there was a couple times where he was just so damn tentative after he made the move that it seemed like he could at least draw a foul or have a layup or whatever. And then other times he would take it right to Williams or take it right to one of the bigs. And it's like, well, now don't, you know, now is the time to be tentative and pass it or just pull up.
Sure.
He was tentative. He just was very tentative. And it's crazy because it's like, dude, you have the green light. And you're in Beeb's struggle. We'll get to him. He was struggling. So it's like, that's what blew me away. And he just has this knack for closeout games. I don't know what his average is, but as far as like an all-pro level player in his career and an all-star, that type of thing, I can't really think of a guy that goes to sleep in elimination games like him, even more than Embiid.
Yeah, I don't know, and that's the reputation that's been on him for a long time. This has been feels like 7 or 8 years.
Now that's Philly. Remember we were talking about trust the process? It's been long like that. It's like
years, I know. But yeah, I just and I suppose if you're in the front office, you gotta wonder, as good of a regular season as we had, you got the MVP, Harden, I mean, way acting game one. Clearly both the players are skilled, but are they skilled enough to win together in the playoffs? Okay, regular season, sure, but
right.
is that a 1-2 you want? Because if not, you got to make a change now. Because why bring it back?
And he's a free agent, too.
Is
it going to be a sign and trade? Probably, if they're going to do anything. But will he want to do that? Unless it's a – because they're talking about he wants to go back to Houston now.
And, I mean, to score 1 point in 6 minutes where you had – I wouldn't say they had Boston on the ropes, but they were playing like the better team. In that game, they had the lead in game six where you could have closed out the series.
Even early in the, they had it like 34 to 25 playing great, then they just went to sleep.
Yeah, so are these the pieces that you want to, to have on your squad? I don't know. And then you scored 10 points in the third quarter last night. Like, again, I know Boston has good defense, but you scored 29 in the first, 23 in the third, and then 10. You had a 10-point quarter, which in the playoffs is embarrassing. And then you had, your 1.6-minute stretch in the fourth.
Where the game was lost right there, 33-10, third quarter.
Yeah, because at halftime I was kind of surprised. I'm like, hey, they're hanging in there. Things are going okay. And then Boston scores.
Considering their stars were shooting like shit, I was like, hey, they can still do this for sure.
Amen. So I don't know. It's just a weird combination of pieces. But that's why they're going home now. And Boston, again, carried by Tatum in the 51 that he dropped. Again, like I said, it's rare star players have off nights, and he is a star. I don't like the guy because he's from Duke, but he is a star player. And he has had moments, especially for the last handful of playoff years, where he'll have a game where he goes off and drops anywhere from 30 to 40 to 50. And that was his one to do in game seven. And Boston, to give them credit, the last couple of years, they may waste some games to put away games, but for like game sevens, they've had a pretty decent stretch. Yeah. Obviously, they made the finals last year, so that's kind of obvious you could say to me. But they've had an opportunity to step up when needed, and their star players done that more so than the star players in Philly or as a team. So I'll tip the cap to Boston because. To me, I feel, and I don't obviously watch a whole lot of Celtic news, I'm not a huge fan of any Boston sport teams, but I really felt that last year it was, oh my God, Marcus Smart's a stud, and Jaylen Brown is so incredible, and Tatum is too. I feel that
it was just my narrative. And Williams is playing really good for him too.
And I feel it's just my narrative, but I feel like it's kind of become more so Tatum is now even more above them. The other two are still good, but not quite. Like, last year was like the Tatum and Brown show, and I was kind of like, okay, but I feel Tatum's maybe taking another step up, which has helped, and you're not quite hearing it's not quite the threesome, it's just, you got Tatum, and again, I'm not saying that Brown is a scrub, because he's not, but I feel that Tatum's really elevated his game, and Marcus Smart, I mean, that guy's, again, defensive and pesky, but Tatum's kind of...
he's not point guard Smart this year.
Yeah.
He was actually sharing the ball more and just doing stuff that was like, whoa, he could do this. You're right.
Yeah.
It has, he's separated as part of it, but it's also like, not that they've digressed per se. I'd say Smart has offensively.
Yes. Yeah, for sure. I would completely agree with that. But I think that's why that signing, which they didn't make last year to, excuse me, to bring in, Brunson, right?
Brunson.
Oh, no, not Brogdon. Brogdon, there we go. Yep. Yeah, because the issue that you had last year in the playoffs was if Smart or Brown had to bring the ball up the court, they really had some really bad off nights and turnovers, and Brogdon has kind of been a piece that is worth mentioning because they're like, well, they need a point guard, because some of those losses to Golden State in the finals, it was like the Marcus Smart turnover show. and they made that adjustment. And Brogdon, from what I've seen him in the playoffs, he's actually, I think he fits in well with that team. He doesn't need the ball religiously, but he can clearly shoot. He's not a guy who can leave it open in the corners, because if you do, he's going to burn you. And he just kind of helps facilitate the team, but doesn't need to be like the lead role with Tatum.
Yeah. Now, Embiid, now, I'm not going to go, he doesn't have the track record of Harden, healthy Harden, dying, you know, really sizzling, not sizzling, the opposite way, fizzling is what I meant to say, drizzling, not drizzling, well, actually a drizzle, not rain, not a downpour, but yeah, just not, you know, just his numbers go down in the playoffs some, and a fair amount some of these years, especially this year. The reason why I won't go as hard on him is because we have seen the injuries. But the thing is, in the game, this game seven in particular, two games ago, he went off. The game after that, game six, he still was playing really well. He didn't look, he didn't look super slow. He didn't look all that effective to where we could say, well, he was just hurt. I'm not saying he wasn't hurt, because obviously, they would have played game one if he wasn't a little something. I thought for a while there, I was like, man, I don't know, dude. I'm not sure if he's going to play all these games or whatever after, you know, he missed the first game. But once you drop like 30-plus, you're on the court. It is what it is, you know. That's kind of what I've always said. And, you know, he just went quiet in the night. He just went away quiet, quiet as a little church girl, both him and Harden, until Embiid got to the post-presser. Then he just said some weird shit about, you know, it can't be just me and Harden. We need everybody to pitch in. And it's like, well, yeah, we know that. I mean, that's fair, like, as far as all around. But in this game in particular, it's like, well, yeah, we know that. So why didn't you guys show up? Because those other guys played, you know, had more points than you, you know. So that was a little weird. But he was just – sometimes you say shit after that you don't mean, or you came out weird or whatever. But, yeah, that was a very strange, you know, post-presser. But also, we don't even know Harden's going to be there, you know. So it's like, we'll get it together. And, of course, he's not going to be like, blow this whole fucking thing up, fuck this, I'm out. You know, he's not going to say that either. But – we don't even know if Harden's going to be there or if they're, you know, that's going to be interesting. It sounds like Houston wants him. I don't know. That's for the offseason or whatever. But Embiid didn't deliver in game seven. He just didn't. And also, you know, that game six, something we didn't mention, because sometimes when we talk before, we kind of already thought we talked about it before we hit record. Another thing about that game six and in game seven, but especially game six in that stretch, it's like, dude, get the fucking ball to Embiid, dude. Get the ball to him. What the hell? It's 6 minutes. He barely touched the ball. But in game seven, he just wasn't effective. He was not effective. And, you know, sometimes even getting stuck in the pick and roll stuff, too. So Embiid didn't deliver in game seven. There's no doubt about it. It's one thing. Like, they had enough this year. You know, in years past, except Jimmy Butler. But in years past, there are some times you're like, yeah, that's just not as – they're just not as good. And I still thought they weren't as good as Boston. But once the series got going and once you got a 3-2 lead, then it's like, all right, dude, you got two games to close this thing out. One of them's at home. So as much as game seven, they needed to get the fucking ball to them, which is, you could say, Harden's fault, the coach's fault, which obviously doesn't have a good track record in the playoffs beyond, you know, a chunk of his first years. And then I guess Embiid too saying, hey, give me the fucking ball. But it is harder for bigs, especially nowadays, to get the ball, you know, because it's such a guard-driven league, unless you're like a Jokic where you the offense runs to you at the elbow or whatever. So, yeah, just a no-show in a game seven. There's no way around it because, like I said, you can't go for 30-something and 20-something and tell me that he was hurt, you know?
True. Yeah, I think we summed up Philly pretty well, and it'll probably be the same kind of chat next year because I don't see a team going to the finals. I'm sure they'll get to a game seven, but somewhere in the playoffs. But yeah, but I will say, There is a guy in the East, though, as Boston will face, that name's Jimmy Butler. He ain't going to fade away, Chris. I will get to it, but that's a guy where when game's on the line, he's not going to have a disappearing magician act like Embiid or Harden. Jimmy Butler's going to go all out, even if he's like half hurt. So they're not going to get a Jimmy Butler disappearance of the night act coming up for their next round.
You know what's funny? So someone always brings this up at the end of the Sixers, when the Sixers get kicked out of the second round, right? So Sixers Nation, this pretty damn popular Twitter account, when Jimmy, this is back in the summer of 2019, right? When they just didn't want to pay Jimmy. And they said, this is what they said to Jimmy. I hope the beaches in warm weather are worth winning 20 to 30 games a year. Because remember, he was going there and there wasn't really a second, third, fourth guy, right? A lot of people thought, like, what the hell are you doing? Would say see in the playoffs, but probably won't be doing that either. Enjoy the rest of your career, long vacation. So it's kind of funny how that, you know, how that in turn, I mean, like I said, don't get me wrong, the Timberwolves shouldn't have traded me there, and we just got proof. We literally just got proof that he still wanted to get paid. Even in that practice, that's what he was yelling, pay me. You got to pay me. He was even saying that shit in the practice. We actually got another person to say that. And obviously Doc Rivers, 7-20 or 32 in clinch series now. So that's kind of something that we've always brought up too. But yeah, you're right. I mean, Miami took care of business, really. It got pushed to six, whatever, but they took care of business, and that'll be a matchup we'll lead with. But let's not spend a ton of time on the Denver Phoenix and L.A. Warriors stuff, but let's go Denver Phoenix. Obviously, Denver gets out 2-0. Phoenix comes back, ties it up, and you're like, okay, we're going to go seven. I felt pretty strong about that in some sense. The other thing told me, damn, like, how many times does Booker and Durant have to go for 30 and 40 apiece? Like, this is going to – we already knew that they were getting stretched minute-wise. And it's like, dude, you just can't keep depending on these crazy performances. They can't do the Kyrie LeBron 2016 game 6, 40 and 40 almost every game, especially Booker. I mean, Booker was going nuts, and it's like – you can't keep doing this, and then CP3 goes down, and then Ayton's, like, not looking that good, and then he doesn't even play in the closeout game. And by that time, you're like, oh, they're fucked. They're fucked. There's no way. There's just no way. And I think down the stretch of that series, you could see Durant's legs just didn't – when you look at his three-point shooting, it just caved. So his shooting was off, no doubt. But we knew that they were going to have an issue with how thin they were, especially this year, how thin they were, and the fact that they only got to play, what was it, 8 games before because of that layup line injury that, you know, Durant suffered. And that's not to take away from Denver. We're about to go deep on Denver and the Lakers in just a short little bit here. But Denver, the fine oil machine, their core has been together. They've added some pieces that just fit really good since the last time they were in the conference final in 2020. And they were the best team all year long, especially in the West. Sure, you could say the last month they didn't play as well. But, you know, Murray had that little thumb thing. And either way, though, they've been there longer. They could just, I don't know, man, they just got it done. And even when Jokic wasn't efficient shooting, right? Because he had some weird games this year where it was like in the playoffs so far where it'd be like, you know, 9 of 27 or something, which is totally usually not him. He's a very efficient player. But like 3 or 4 of those would be three-pointers, you know? So you're like, yeah, but look at his three-point percentage. His three-point percentage is silly through two series. So, you know, now Phoenix – you know, they fired the coach. Ayton's gone, all but gone. And now, you know, it kind of made sense signing him because now you can at least do something, right? You can do something with him. CP3 now his numbers are like 30 million or something, which nowadays it's not 40, 45, or 50, right? So his contract, I think, is actually more tradable than it used to be. You assume they're going to do some stuff. But, you know, and then back-to-back years with that closeout game, right, where they just get their ass kicked, Marshall.
Yeah, well, at least you'd assume that the closeout in that one time was because of the COVID bug, which is a bit fair. Okay? Sure, I wish I'd known that before betting it. But this man, again, like we were saying before the show, this thing was – that closeout game was done about 4 to 5 minutes in. I think they went on like – it was something like a 24-2 run, or it was some crazy run where you normally don't see them, especially in the first half of an NBA closeout game. Like, I know sometimes a closeout team will win, but on the road – Jokic literally said, "You guys have no one to guard me, and I'm just going to do my thing," and like was scoring effortlessly. And yeah, you know, maybe you could put KD on him. I don't know, but you could have tried some different things. I'm sure KD and Booker were probably tired as hell. And yeah, that was a complete team in Denver who has been wanting to obviously go to the finals. They've had some injury bugs affect them in the past, and this is their time to shine. And unlike Boston, they didn't waste a game. That was like, hey, we want to finish this shit. We're not going to push it for a game seven on our home
That's
court.
That's a great point. I don't care who you got out. I don't care if you're tired. Yeah. We're taking you out.
And that's something Boston's done twice in the playoffs. They've wasted two closeout games. Denver said, oh, no, we're getting this shit done quick. And when you go into halftime up 30 points in a playoff game, yeah, that's done. So, unfortunately, my buddy bet the game over, Chris. It was 225 and a half. He needed 94 points in the second half. He got 93.5.
He missed
the over by a half point. So, but I mean, you know, Denver took their foot off the gas because you're up 30 at half.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it makes sense. It was very unfortunate for my friend. But, yeah, that was just complete domination from the start. You knew that KD and Booker were not going to be able to do it all. KD did look tired, like you said. Again, Booker, like, what's the guy going to do? Drop, like, 70? Like, you know, that came down to the lack of bench, which we noticed in the first round, and lack of team cohesion and chemistry due to injuries this year and just the fact that when they made the trade. So,
real quick, stat news. The Suns, I said this off air, the Suns were 0-4 in this series when Devin Booker doesn't shoot 78% and above from the field. It's like, come on, dude. What's he going to do? Is he really going to do that? Like, it's impossible. Not even – you know, Michael Jordan maybe Michael Jordan in high school, with him being Michael Jordan in high school could do that. But other than that, that's a rough one.
Yeah. If you're the Suns, though, hey, okay, we got Booker and we got KD, assumingly both healthy next year. What do we want to do for bench pieces? Do we want to make trades? Who do we like coming back? What's the move to the future? Because clearly, if you have a healthy Booker and healthy KD, that's a nasty looking team. You just got to add pieces around it. So,
and I'd say do the role player pieces. You know, just get two or three role players. Don't worry about getting all the, you know, some of that will be picks, but you don't need another big name guy to go max to max or something like that. You know, kind of like Dallas did 2 years ago when they brought in a bunch of, you know, just defenders and stuff like that, and role players, and all of a sudden they improved. That's what they got to do, man.
Yeah, I'm with you because again, yeah, when healthy, Booker and KD are obviously a very dominant scoring force, and you just got to find different pieces around. But this is not the first time we've ever seen a team try to, you know, like to help the Lakers. Look at the bench players they had when you started LeBron and AD, and almost all those guys are now on different teams. And I mean, granted, a lot of those guys have had good careers, but sometimes you got to just fiddle around with stuff in the front office, and be like, okay, here's our set pieces. What do we add? And sometimes you add the wrong pieces, which, shit, that's part of life. That's sports in
general.
That's
what Denver's been doing this last 4 years. Uh-huh. They've just been retooling, little minor moves, and then, boom, we got some.
Yeah, and give credit to Denver. That, I mean, obviously, Phoenix wasn't their best, but Denver said, hell, we're going to finish this shit, and Jokic has been playing like a beast pretty much in the whole playoffs. So a tip of the cap to them. This is the first time I can recall where Michael Porter Jr. has been healthy for basically their whole playoff
run. Better knock on wood, dude.
I know.
I'm saying that. Good call.
And he's a Mizzou guy too, so I've always kind of liked him. But, you know, he's just such a dynamic, freak athletic player. but it's probably been him or Murray that takes time being injured, and now you have a full, you know, combination of Jokic, Murray, Gordon, Michael Porter Jr. That's a pretty damn good four. Like, that really is there better? I don't know. I mean, just overall, top to bottom, that's a really solid four players that are going to play a majority of the minutes on your court. That's not bad, and they're finally all together. So, yeah, they took care of business. But again, hey, you didn't waste the game. You got some rest, and you got home court too. So they will. I'm sure that'll be a nice factor for them to enjoy, which they earned, Chris, in the regular season, finishing number one.
Yep, and they were they were healthy too, which is something that plays into not just the playoffs, of course, unfortunately, but the regular season and getting that home court. On to L.A. in Golden State. Winning that first game was big, obviously. The three-point shooting, you know, for Golden State, definitely, I mean, it fell off, obviously. If you look at even from the first two games, you know, to the last four, it fell off, obviously. But, yeah, here it is. It was 40 for the first two games, 44%. Last four were 30%. That was still had a little time left in that closeout game. But, you know, even in that game six, you know, they had 11 offensive rebounds. I think that's what kept them in. But they're like 4 of 19 from three, where the Lakers were 5 of 8. They had 43 shots to 28 to the Lakers. So they had their second, you know, those second chance opportunities and everything like that. By the way, the ratings were just, you know, the biggest in over a decade. Some of these games for first or second round games, some of them, you know, peaked at something that was on actually NBC at the time and not TNT or ESPN, which does make a bit of a difference, that's for sure, as far as the peak and all that when it's on free TV. And, you know, Clay had a tough one. You know, game four, 9 points, game five, 10, and I think 8 or 9 or something like that. But, yeah, 8 or 9 in game six. It was just rough. A weird stat for the season. 0-27 this season when trailing after three quarters on the road. I mean, for that team, and if you look at the amount of turnovers, they had that last year, so that was different. But, fouling the most and getting to the free throw least, that is something we talked about going into the series. But they just couldn't knock down shots, you know. And it was a tough matchup for them. But, yeah, I mean, do they have some questions to start answering as far as their roster? To an extent, yeah. I mean, obviously Draymond Green stands out as, you know, is he going to stay for sure? You know, I don't know. Poole, you know, I mean, that dude was basically a non-factor overall. Mm-hmm. He had one or two good games or whatever. But, yeah, man, it was a weird matchup for him. You have a team that gets to the line the most, going against a team that fouls the most. That's,
yeah.
You have a defensive team. I mean, a lot of the stuff, they turn the ball over against the best defensive team left in the league. It's just, it wasn't a great lineup, or it wasn't a great, you know, matchup. But ultimately, missing that many threes, because that is such a key, you know, part to their game, and not being able to have that many guys that can get to the rack, like all the way to the rack and draw fouls, you know, and dish. Even though Curry in some of those games had that great assist game and all that.
Yeah, I think this just might kind of be the end of their run. And if it is, like I was telling someone in Vegas, like I got spoiled as a fan. Like a lot of people who like, just this is just from a pure fan standpoint that loves their sport teams around the country have never seen titles, like AKA, you know, me as a Viking fan. But, I mean, the team won four championships in, like, 10 years. Like, what more do you want as a sport fan? Like, from an NBA standpoint, every year is a new year to compete. But I think we're just seeing the fact that these guys have, like, it's been a grind. I remember it feels like, oh, I know it's not 20, but it feels like 20 years ago when, like, Stephen Curry was drafted and the dude had bum ankles for, like, the first 4 years of his career and finally got healthy. And now they've pretty much been on a run for the past decade to where, so like, yeah, did LA kick their ass in the last couple games? Yeah. But like, how much longer can a team stay on top? You know, I don't think many people thought they'd win the title last year, and they did. They made it. I mean, they made it to the second round this year, so it's not like a complete embarrassment. But I just think you saw those moments where all the guys are a bit older. I'm not saying that Steph is washed. He dropped 50 in a game, you know, in the first round. But I just think it's the combination of you got to start looking for new pieces. You've had the Clay, Dre, and Steph combo with Iggy for, again, a long time. And now you're going to have to start making those tough choices of how do we start looking towards the future? Because
yeah,
in 3 to 4 years,
Wiggins are, you know, they got years on their deal. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Because in three to four years, Steph and Clay are probably done or to the point in their career where they're not going to be playing, you know, 40, you know, and Clay had those back-to-back years of injuries. So I just think it's the time to start looking.
Do you move Clay then? Do you move Clay? Because that's probably what you're going to get more for. I don't know. Or do you move Drain? I mean, what do you do?
And then if those guys want to stay in their career and finish the year out there, do you as a fan, or do you as a franchise say, hey, it's a business, see ya? Or do you
want to let them finish? Well, there's no pay cuts either. Like the NFL, you can't trim your, hey, I'll take $8 million off of my number. Nope, that's not how it works.
And that's a tough spot, too, because those guys brought you a lot of success. Do you tell Clay and, Clay and Draymond, well, you know, we got trade offers for you, we got a new place, or, you know, I don't know. But there's a lot of tough choices for them to make. But, again, yeah, the Lakers kicked their ass. They did, and if the run's over, it was a good run. If not, maybe get a couple of new pieces. And the one thing is they've never really found a really solid big man along with Draymond. They've had probably the two best shooting guards of all time, and they've had different people, but they've never quite found another big to help with Draymond. It's kind of just been Draymond and a bunch of good wings, but that other big they've drafted a lot of them, but feels like every
good defensive rebounding big this year that could get assists too.
True. I mean, Looney's not bad, but I think
he's been pretty solid, I would say.
Well, he has.
As far as
is he
going to
be a future piece, like when Steph and Clay are gone?
Oh, I see what you're saying for the future.
Yeah,
I was going to say, I don't know, dude. Looney's been pretty money for him, but I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
If you got rid of Draymond, it's not like you'd be like, okay, we got Looney, we're good.
Mm-hmm. So, but hey, to give the Lakers credit, talking about pieces, again, 3 years ago, you felt like they had a lot of good players on their roles, and they kind of cleaned the whole shop and trade for AD, and now you're seeing now you're seeing a combination of, like, people love Reeves, and they've kind of done some other retooling, and I think the Lakers now finally got pieces to help LeBron, because again, talking about age, LeBron's probably got less years left on his wheels and treads than Steph and Clay, unless he hangs out to play with his son, which could happen. But, you know, and he again, has his moments where he can do his thing and be LeBron. But he's also not going to go full out, you know, 48 minutes a game, you know, and be like the old stuff used to be. So the Lakers have found the pieces. Again, Reeves is the name you hear consistently. But the fact that I've heard this guy's name mentioned now about nonstop for the past 3 months is probably due to the respect he deserves. That guy's been on a hell of a roll, Chris. And, I mean, I'm not saying it's just LeBron, AD, and Reeves. That's the only show. But, man, every time I listen to any sports station or any podcast, it's like Reeves, Reeves, Reeves. So I think they found a nice piece, along with others, to help LeBron and AD carry this team to the Western Conference Finals.
Something you skipped there, that you went right to the trade. That's why I almost jumped in. They did win the championship in 2020. All the shitty people that they talked about that you needed to get rid of, they got rid of. And then all of a sudden it was like, well, wait a second. Maybe we shouldn't have got rid of all those guys, or maybe we should have made different trades or whatever. So it has been funky. And then obviously injuries. I mean, AD, like, it just hasn't, even when they, what were they, up 2-1 on the Suns 2 years ago, right? Is that what it was, 2-1? I think it was 2-1 when they went to the conference finals. AD got hurt and the whole thing fell apart. Because remember, they had to win. They actually beat Golden State to get into that series, I think. If I remember correctly.
I'm trying
to get in there.
Oh yeah, in that play-in game. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, you're right, yeah.
And the Suns, I think maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they're only up 1-0. I thought they were up 2-1. But either way, the biggest thing during the regular season in that playoff series, obviously, you know, they didn't go to the playoffs the year after that, but biggest thing has been a healthy AD.
Yes.
Now that, you know, LeBron is at a different age, we've seen this Durant with other guys too, that when you miss some time, they really got to miss some time to make sure, you know, that they're all the way back, and just these minor things that, you know, in your 20s and early 30s, you can bounce back from, Marshall. All of a sudden, it's like, man, this is getting tougher and tougher to bounce back. And so a lot of that is pieces, and it goes much further than just Reeves. I'll tell you that. Vando, ever since Vando got traded there, I've been finally hearing good shit about Vando on the national level. He was stuck in Minnesota. Not stuck. He was playing really good for us. But, you know, you don't get as much attention because people don't watch Timberwolves games. So it was kind of funny to see Twitter blowing up on certain nights about Vando. Look at this possession. Look at he's running all over the place, you know. And you're like, yeah, dude, this is what he's been doing.
True.
And then D'Lo being able to beat D'Lo fully has been huge for them. So, yeah, man, it's been interesting. And why don't we just – unless you got something else to say, let's jump into the Eastern Conference Final, and then we'll go –
Sure.
We'll go – do you have any last words on that?
No, I think we summed that up pretty well.
So the trilogy, last three out of the 4 years, this is the trilogy now in the Eastern Conference Final. Boston, like I mentioned earlier, only one day rest. Yeah, they got home court advantage, but they only, you know, they went six games, then seven games. And so that plays into it. You know, that definitely plays into it. On paper, once again, Boston should win this. They got a better team. You know, this year it's been inconsistent. A lot of that has to do with the coach. I'm sure it does. Miami has a major coaching. They can either be even or have the coaching advantage in a, you know, the majority of series that they're going to go into. They definitely have a major advantage here. They have some rest as well. And a key stat, well, first of all, this is the second AC to reach the conference finals since 1984. The Knicks in 1999 were the other one. Wanted to bring that out. Shouts out to the Knicks. But, man, like, there was this stat. Here it goes. So the last Eastern Conference final with these two teams, the Celtics shot 35% from three. The Heat shot 30%. My guess is – Just random that the Heat are going to shoot a little bit better than 30% this year.
Yes, I think they will. I mean, obviously, they've had a couple of injuries, but this is a Heat team that, excuse me, not many people probably thought would have taken care of Milwaukee. It seemed like the media was kind of split 50-50 on the Knicks, but they made quick business of that too. So, yeah, and I think that a guy that we talked about when our playoff podcast started was, I had said they were kind of like a drop down in a way, because you had that little peak run, or well, early run they had when it was like Duncan Robinson, Hero, and that kind of faded away for a little bit, and you saw a lot more of Vincent and Strus, and I just didn't think those guys were that legit. And that's why when we did our first playoff show of the year this year, I was like, I don't know about the Heat, but it seems like on a lot of given nights here, Strus and Vincent have really stepped it up. Obviously, Bam Adebayo is probably one of the quietest names you know, but that can give you a triple-double on a given night. And the guy just, again, he's not maybe a super, superstar, but he's still a pretty good-ass player. So, yeah, I just think that.
Even old man Lowry, you know, can come and give you good minutes too.
Yeah, he's had a handful of games where he scored 30 in the playoffs this year. So, I do think that. Again, if Boston wastes a game this series, Chris, that might be enough to cost them. Because, again, they took their foot off the gas versus Atlanta, did so against Philly. If you do that against a team like Miami, which you assume they will because they've done it twice now, that might be enough for Miami to win the series. I think with a team like Miami, there's too many veterans. Now, again, like you said on paper, skill-wise, if you're playing NBA 2K, you look up player ratings, Boston might take it there, but they got the huge head coach advantage. You got a guy who's not going to fade away. I do think this series goes deep. Clearly, Boston shows they have been beatable at home this year. And if you're Miami, you're kind of playing with house's money in a way. Now, I know it's a very veteran team, and these guys have been through a lot, but I think that, yeah, just with the veteran team and an experienced coach, and kind of that will of, like, I mean, obviously the Heat, I know, have lost the game, but you don't really see them have that oh shit game
Yeah.
I kind of like the matchup for the Heat in this situation.
Yeah, man. I mean, they're just that pesky team that overachieves, that won't go away, that they do have a core that has been there or come off the bench. Some of these guys, like you mentioned, that started out as role players and now their roles have expanded. And some guys are still there or they're, you know, hurt, like you said, with Hero and whatnot. But some guys are just in different spots. But, you know, for 2-3 games in the series, they can still go off, you know, off the bench. So, yeah, they are. They're right there. They're right there. I just wonder if Boston finally is going to pull their head out of their ass, you know. But then again, some of it is coaching. And I don't want to put it all on coaching because it does have to do with the players and the chemistry and the starting lineup isn't as good. And Williams is a really good player at center, but when he's in the starting lineup, but he hasn't been as good ever since he had that knee injury. And the other Williams that comes off the bench that just doesn't seem like he fits all that well in the NBA nowadays, but he does when he's really playing good. They just have the more talent. But I keep thinking about the year they were, you know, last year when they went to the finals, the first 2 months they were horrible. And even the COVID-ridden Minnesota Timberwolves beat them, like, with none of their starters in, basically. You know, maybe D'Lo came back. I don't remember. One of the starters came back. It was like that first 2 months was horrible. And then they just turned on. So they can turn it on and off. It just, you know, that is a slippery slope. I still think the home court advantage with that, you know, that maniac-type crowd and the talent. I'm still going to go with the Celtics, but I want for sure game six. At least game six. But it does feel like this thing's going to go seven. But I am going to go with the C's.
I will switch it up just like I did with that Denver pick, and I almost got Denver in five. I was damn close. I'm going to take Heat in six. So I think Boston slips up, and I think the Heat take care of their home court. See, I'll take ops away. I'll take Jimmy Butler to win game six at home and advance to the finals.
Yeah, and I'll say this. We like the preference. I mean, we overall picked the shit. We just did.
Yeah.
But if, in fact, it's 1-1, you know, that game six closeout, good luck with Jimmy that night. Because mm-hmm. You're right. You're right.
Yeah, he ain't going to pull a Hardner and beat him, being afraid to shoot or lead his team.
No, he's not going to be tentative. I don't even know if that's even I don't think he's learned that word.
No.
Tentative. Yeah, I don't think he does that. Maybe people say he's tentative during the regular season with his knees or something like that. I'd much rather have a guy miss like 30-some games and then, you know, during the regular season, except besides the opposite, get hurt in the playoffs, you know. But yeah, so we'll see how that goes. And then obviously what both of us, we talked about before we hit record, you know, we do kind of feel like whoever wins this series is going to win the championship. Even though Boston is still the favorite, depending where you look, that Denver has opened as the favorite. I saw +140 is the highest I saw for Los Angeles. But it is starting to come down. As far as Laker money, I haven't checked in the last little bit. I'm looking series odds on ESPN. Denver -155, Los Angeles -135. But I've seen the highest I saw was +140. Saw like a +120 for the Lakers. So just it's close to – for me, it's a 50-50 series. I get my Denver would be a slight favorite. The home court in that at least the game – you know, usually that first game there is kind of weird. Even if you go there early, the elevation thing is real. But I think at some point that goes away. But the matchups, I mean, let's go through a lot. We're going to, instead of like long out, me talking for a long time, you talking for a long time, I'm just going to shoot stuff at you. You know,
okay.
I'm going to shoot questions at you for once. What do you think about that? Now, the difference is we already went over some of these. See the difference? I put these on paper, my friend.
Oh.
Yeah. But, hey, that's okay. All right. So the matchups Bets are all over the place, dude. It's really fun because, you know, everybody's talking about Davis and Jokic, right? Which obviously, right? But how much are they really going to play each other? I would probably guess Davis is going to play Jokic more. I wouldn't doubt if they put Jokic on Vando more or just as much as Davis. I just don't think Jokic, they're going to risk that foul problem stuff. And that is a big thing. The foul issue is a major concern for both those Davis and Jokic. If they get in the foul problems, look out. I will say this. It feels like Jokic can get early foul problems and be a type of player that can kind of control it a little more. But it's not like Davis is Karl Anthony Towns or something with the fouls when his emotions just get the better of him. But what do you think? I mean, first of all, Jokic expands enough energy on offense for what he does in rebounding offense and defense that it's like, do you really want to put him on Davis?
Yeah, I don't see that happening. Normally, and it does appear in big games like this, the superstars in the NBA rarely ever do guard each other. I mean, yeah, because that's why I got like Klay Thompson was valuable because he was like a good star player for them, but he would guard the best player that team was facing, and that's the advantage they had. And it's a guy like Draymond too, so that obviously defensively they were a low team. That's why they've had the success they've had.
Iggy, and they
had the defensive people, and not that Jokic and AD are like complete bums on the defensive end of the court, but normally.
Oh, Davis is a stud on defense.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you're looking for an advantage offensively, and then you want to let your guy rest defensively just so he has more offensive energy. So, yeah, I'm sure we'll see it at times. And, hell, that's why even with LeBron throughout his whole career, Chris, come fourth quarter, especially back in the day, he's like, dude, if someone's going off, I'm going to shut his ass down. Okay, so and even so, on given moments, he can do that too. But I do think that you do kind of want to hide your star from their star just because that's strategy. And also, you know, when you have two stars playing against each other, that can create fouls offensively or defensively. So I'd rather have, you know, Jokic hide on a guy who's a less offensively talented player than Anthony Davis and vice versa. Because obviously, if, as you said, those guys get in foul trouble, that's a big thing. So maybe I think for our discussion of matchups, in the fourth quarter they could change, but I do think you kind of want to hide both of them from each other to avoid foul troubles in general, my friend.
And I think, you know, Davis is such a stud on defense, and that really came true in that Golden State. It has to be his whole career. It just helped with Davis. Now, his play offensively is very hit or miss. This last series, he only had one, like, 9-point game or whatever. But other than that, even that closeout game, he didn't have a lot of points, but man, he got rebounds and blocks. It was just a stud defensively. It made Golden State think about a lot of stuff, and he was a stud. So obviously, I think you can get away with Davis playing more defense, just in general. And then, you know, like, I do think Jokic will be on Vando as long as Vando's in the lineup, but then, so who do you put on Jokic then? Because if you put him on Vando, I think you could try that out. But I have seen that not just, you know, but first of all, they didn't play last January. So they didn't play with the teams they got. They didn't play. And obviously, you know, the Lakers are different now. So their starting lineup, their bench and all that. So they didn't play with this Laker team. Neither side played, really. So now, would you take out Vando and put, you know, Hachimura in? You know, I don't know. And then maybe you get more minutes off the bench from Mo Bamba. You know, I think he could surprise and come off the bench and just as a big man willing to fall and, you know, put his hands up or whatever. But it is interesting because then you go to Vando. Do you put Vando, you know, on Jokic? I think he's too small. I think he'll get bully balled.
Yeah, I agree.
But, and then there's some ball problems too on Vando. I think you put Vando either on Murray or Porter Jr., and I would key on Murray because I think that Reeves actually lines up really well with Porter, both length and Reeves is an underrated defender. So, and then he also makes a guy like Porter or somebody else work on the offensive end because they give D'Lo and Reeves a lot of offensive freedom to get to their spots and get to their shots. And get something that looks good. So you know, I'd say try it on Murray first with Vando. Otherwise, you know, Porter Jr. Would be something I would look at too.
Yeah, and Porter Jr. is obviously a freak athlete. He's not necessarily a lockdown defender. Hell, he's had years where he kind of has been ripped on for his defensive effort, but I feel when you're in the Western Conference Finals, your attitude will pick up a little bit. But yeah, I'm with you. I think that we'll probably know answer a lot of these questions after game one. Or one of the best parts of NBA coaching is how you right. make adjustments as the series goes. Like, I remember the first time the Warriors won the title, to take Bogut out of the lineup was like, oh, shit, seriously? And right. that they created the death lineup, and that literally
right, yep.
won them, and to start Iguodala. And yes. it's like, yep. and that comes down to, Chris, is are players willing to accept it? Because you know as well as me, there's probably some NBA guys who a coach says that, and he's like, hey, you cool with that? And some guys are like, fuck no, coach, I'm not. No, and that was the team chemistry they had. I'm not saying that the Lakers or Nuggets would be against that, but it takes a lot for you to take NBA guys who've been starting all year and say, hey, we ain't starting you. It's the biggest game of the year. And he's like, yeah, I got you, coach. I believe in you. I don't think
they just did that to Vando in the last game.
Uh-huh. And then,
he is used to playing 11 or 12 or 20 minutes sometimes too, even as a starter.
And then you got egos, you got a different lineup. I mean, it sometimes works, but now obviously Steve Kerr got lucky to pull the triggers he did. But, yeah, not everyone's always going to be with it, and then you're getting maybe less productivity out of said player who you now bench who's not been
or it's just the wrong move, too. That didn't work.
You're right.
You know?
Or just backfires in general. So I do like how we're breaking down who guards Jokic, who guards Davis, and I think it's a chess match for the coaches, too, and who's going to make a better decision. And, again, do you see come fourth quarter LeBron and AD say, dude, who's ever on the hottest one, we're stopping him, you know, and right. sometimes that happens. But then you had a guy like Giannis who said, I didn't guard Jimmy, but Budenholzer didn't tell me to. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, but you know, so it's a chess match. It really is. But I do think initially, I think the fact when you list out Jokic, Murray, Porter, and Gordon, I think those four players are overall better than the Lakers' top four. Now, again, obviously it's LeBron, it's AD, but I think people are sleeping on Nuggets a little bit just because they're not the Lakers. I think this is a team that for the last 4 years has probably one of the best win-loss records in the league. You have home court. You got a talented MVP. I'm not saying Jokic is LeBron. I'm not going to go crazy. But,
no, but they're very it's very also they were hurt. People were talking about True. Even last series. Well, you saw what happened with Jokic. They shut him down, like Ayton shut him down. Well, they didn't have Murray, dude. Murray didn't play a play in that series, like 2 years ago, you know? And
yeah.
then they lost, they got swept, right? Or did they win one to Golden State? Well, Golden State won the chip. You know, they weren't healthy. That was the problem.
Yeah, so I think that if Denver is fully healthy, I think they're a better team than LA this year. I just think you kind of have that media narrative. Hell, just like if it's a team from like New York or LA, they're going to get the hype and the love. But Vegas has Denver favored, I think, out of respect that they've earned.
Yeah.
And I do think they're going to be able to pull this one out. But would it surprise you if LeBron and AD go off? No, because they're LeBron and AD. But it will be nice to see a fully healthy Nuggets team again, knock on wood, and see how they do, because this could be their time to shine. Now, they haven't made the NBA Finals since, Lord, it's as kids say, it's been a minute, Chris. It's been a minute.
Yeah, it's been a series of minutes. So back to the matchups, I do think LeBron will either be on Porter if he's going off, or LeBron
Sure.
will be on Gordon. I think Gordon will be on LeBron. There's a chance that they could put KCP on LeBron. I could kind of see that. Like I said, I think Reeves matches up pretty well with Porter. And then D'Lo on KCP. Now, can they take advantage of that, playing a little two-man game with Jokic? Obviously, the two-man game with Jokic and Murray is key, and that's kind of why I'd put Vando on Murray. So you got a guy that's bigger than him, stronger than him, and is willing to run through all those goddamn, you know, picks. Like, there'll be times I remember Ant saying, dude, I had to run through, like, six picks just to cover Murray on one possession. You know, that shit is – it wears you down. But Vando – maybe through a season, his style of play wears down in the season, But in that in particular game, he does. That guy is a go-go gadget. You know, he goes, dude. He'll just never stop. I agree with your top four players, by the way. But I do think LA is a deeper team off the bench. I think they have a mix of young players and experienced players off the bench. So I'd say they're a deeper team, but the top four, now that they've played together so much too, I think that I'm right there with you with the top four for Denver. But I do think the depth of it is better for LA and both teams, like we said earlier, they're big and long, pause, and they thrive on paint points. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say, this might be an easy question, but so Jokic obviously is the number one catalyst. Do you think it's kind of just need to have kind of a hodgepodge of Gordon, Murray, and Michael Porter Jr. to all go off? Or do you think it's really got to be Jokic and Murray every game and hope for help? Like, I guess I don't watch the Nuggets play religiously, but I feel with those four together, like, is it kind of that, is Denver a 1-2 Batman Robin? Or do you think that's kind of the collective starters together we're going to be looking for a series success? Kind of like, you know, how you mentioned like KD and Booker, that was it. Do we think Denver needs the Jokic-Murray show every night or more of a collective team effort to win?
That's interesting. And that kind of plays in with my other point too, about what the Lakers would want from Jokic. Of course, they'd want a turned ankle, you know,
sure, yeah,
obviously, right? Everyone would on both sides, but I think throughout the series, that two-man game has to be strong. Doesn't mean Murray has to go for 30 every game because they do have a Porter, but I really think it's a huge series for Murray and Porter based off what you just asked me, because I think LA would gladly take Jokic scoring 30 and 38 and shit. I mean, that game that they lost the game he had 53 points in. So they'd rather him score a bunch and have to do some of that. Like I said, his three-point shooting has been off the – I mean, it's been nuts so far in the playoffs through two series. It really has, Jokic. But his efficiency from the field has been kind of strange in some games where you're like, wow, 9-27, that is not like him. Usually him and LeBron are very efficient. And you can even make that argument until recently with LeBron. His efficiency hadn't been good in that closeout game. It was like old LeBron where you're like, yep, how many shots he take? And he got that? Yep, that makes sense. So I think they'd gladly take that in the 30s game, but not the all-purpose game, the 26 points, the 17 boards, the 14 assists with only three turnovers. I think that's why they have to be, both of them have to be huge, and it's not going to be Murray every night. It definitely has to be Porter too, but I think that's when they're most dangerous to win and win a championship, not just a series, but win a championship is it does have to be all three. It is the big three. I know what you're saying. It is big two.
Sure.
But then again, if you go big two, which big two do you want? LeBron or AD?
Yeah.
Or, you know what I mean? Uh-huh. And then you start to go past those four, you go – if you go big two against big two and then you go top eight players, that favors the Lakers. So, yeah, man, I love this series. I really do. And I would favor the Lakers in six if this was like 2 or 3 years ago, LeBron. But right now, LeBron has to take breaks defensively. And that's what's been so big with Reeves and D'Lo, to take some of that pressure off, bring the ball up, making shit on their own and facilitating like D'Lo can. He hasn't done it as much in the playoffs, but when his shot's off on this team, he usually does facilitate pretty well. But we need LeBron bully ball. Don't get mad at me, but they were hunting Curry in that series with LeBron over and over again, especially in the end of it, especially that last game. They were like, nope. And you notice how they barely chipped. Took out LeBron and AD. They were like, early fourth? Yeah, we're keeping them in. Nope, we're going to close this out. We have to. We cannot let that team get into it. And, yeah, it's not Golden State, but Denver does have that offense where you're just like, holy shit, they just caught us. That was a 15-2 run. So, you really, you know, that's going to be key. That's why I think this is such a great, great series. And a lot of people talking about 2020, different teams on both sides. Some really high-profile guy made him – who the hell was it? I was listening to the podcast. It probably was – I think it was the Low Post. Yep. He said Vando was on that – Vando and Beasley was on that 2020 bubble team not playing, but that's not true. They had already made the trade right before – like a month before COVID, they had made the trade. So they weren't on that team. Obviously, they didn't play in the bubble because they weren't good enough, the Timberwolves. But those two players weren't even on that team. There's really, on both sides, not many people that were even on the team anymore. But that's the NBA, whatever. But, yeah, man, this is a pick-em to me, for sure.
Yeah, I'll go with – I think – and both teams haven't lost home yet. So I will go with Nuggets in seven. I think Jokic in seven – they advance to the finals.
Denver or Jokic?
Jokic and the company. Yeah, they go. Yeah, they all. Jokic, sorry, I'm going by myself, guys. Good luck.
Take it easy. He's going to have to get in better shape than I guess. He's going to have to put on weight and lose weight and the same thing and bring up the ball. And he can actually bring up the ball once in a while. So the difference maker to me is, although I agree with the top line, top four, I still think they have the two top best players.
Sure.
2-2 and 2-2. But also, that old saying, a defense wins championships. And I don't think this time around, Denver has played better defense. I'll give them that for sure, especially at home. I mean, those first two games against Phoenix were very telling, right? So I'm not trying to say they were the defensive team where they're only going to outscore you, right? I think that's bullshit. And they're a hell of an offensive rebounding team. And Jokic, we were talking about this too before we hit record. Jokic just has a nose for, you know, getting his own shot. Patrick Ewing, Kevin Love, like these guys, it's like they just know their shots off. No, I got it. Don't worry. Just a little tip in or an offensive rebound where they just, it's all about positioning down low. And I think that gets lost with bigs because they're just not fed or active enough or whatever with most bigs nowadays, where it's really about positioning and it's not about athleticism when it comes to getting position in the post. And it's not about whatever, a lot of different things. And that's the thing, that Denver's ability to get that offensive rebound, but they're – it's funny because sometimes that outlet pass, they can get it going. Other times they do want to grind, right? They have a grinded out slow two-man, you know. But that slow down stuff plays right into the half court offensively and defensively for the Lakers. So I do think they got to get more up and down. And I think a guy like Porter, like you said, with all that athleticism, has to get to the rack a little bit more. But I am going to go defense. That old saying, maybe I'm old school, I'm older than you, defense wins championships. And as long as Davis and LeBron are healthy, but either way, I'm picking game seven, Lakers.
Yeah, I hope it goes seven. That's obviously, that'd be a lot of fun to watch. So on that note, we did our review and preview. We have four good teams remaining. It wouldn't surprise me whoever makes the finals, and we should be spoiled with pretty good finals. And it's going to be good basketball. We'll be back in next Monday. We appreciate love and support. Stay safe. Stay out of trouble. The boys are out tonight. Have a good one. Peace.